All right, we're talking now with Steve Krause, our sports journalist, news journalist from Lynn. And Steve, welcome back to MSO. How you doing?
Pretty good, Rick. How about yourself?
We're doing all right. You know, as the saying goes, there are hills and there are valleys, and sometimes it's a flat road. You know, but we're navigating as we all do. Steve, I got a couple of topics I want to just kind of bat around with you, and then we'll just open it up to anything you might want to mention. And we can talk Patriots a little bit if you want to, because I have an opinion on that as well. But I was just thinking recently about, we've talked about so much stuff, and I was thinking about maybe what your biggest disappointment in sports might be, and then maybe your happiest surprise might be. I've got a couple of things that came to mind, and that's what made me think of it. So anything you can think of in terms of really what a major disappointment, because we've talked of people, you know, getting jobbed and disappointments with, you know, overhyping. But I'm talking about a personal sports thing when you get, when you know, we're so involved in following sports.
When you say that, you mean something that happened to me personally?
No, just as a fan or as a journalist.
Oh, okay.
No.
I'll tell you that I remember, I'm like any Boston fan, I remember the bad stuff way more than I remember the good stuff.
Yep.
I will say that of all the viewing disappointments that I've had in my life, and this is going to almost seem like out of left field for this, but with all the Red Sox and the Yankees stuff and the Patriots and their undefeated season that went bust and everything, the biggest disappointment for me as a fan was Boston versus Montreal Canadiens, 1971.
I hear you. Yep.
The rise of Ken Dryden.
Yep.
And the Bruins were just wiping the floor with everybody during the regular season. They had won the Stanley Cup the season before. This was sort of the dynasty, the end all dynasties. And they go into Montreal, first game, they kill them, and they're leading 5-1 or something like that in the second game, and they all of a sudden, they just decide they're not going to play anymore, and the Canadians come back and win that game 7-5. And then the Bruins, for whatever reason, Ken Dryden found his rhythm, you know, he stuffed them on all those usual doorstep goals that they scored. They had a terrible time and ended up losing in 7 games. And the Canadians went on to win the Cup. And to me, that was just an incredible disappointment because it just changed the whole dynamic of the history of that team.
I wish
there was no dynasty to end all dynasties.
I wish you hadn't brought that up because that makes me sad. I remember that. It ripped my heart out.
After the year I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
That was on a personal roll. And
yeah, no, I remember that because we figured all of us young fans would figure, we figured the Bruins were going to win the Cup 4 or 5 years in a row. And it was just like, where do these guys come from? Montreal, of all teams, you know, again they did it to us.
And they were a fourth-place team during the year.
Yep.
You know, everybody just looked at them and said, they're going to be, you know, everybody was looking ahead to the Rangers or the Blackhawks.
Yep.
I think it would have been the Rangers.
Well, you know, it's... It's funny, Steve, because Montreal did what the Celtics did a few years before that. Remember when the Celtics finished fourth and they went on to win the championship? Same
they
type.
They ended up beating the Lakers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's funny because, as I said, man, that brings back a bad memory. I gotta go.
Oh, this is awful, man.
I gotta go
the
take
worst,
a Tums.
My worst sports memories have been hockey, man. Too many men on the ice.
Yep, that Montreal.
And it's always been Montreal.
Yep.
So anybody ever asks me about which team do you hate the most? Well, it's Montreal. I mean, not even the Yankees. No. Montreal,
right.
Canadiens.
Bill Newell had Brad Park in studio back when we were working WESX, and Brad Park was one of the nicest guys I've ever met, you know, as a professional. He was wonderful. And Bill asked him about tough guys, and Brad Park said the toughest guy he ever played against was John Ferguson of Montreal. So there it goes. There it is again.
Of a lot of people that played against.
Well, God, yeah. Oh, well, mine is mine's out of left field, Steve, way out of left field. In fact, it's from the pitching mound, and this is going to seem weird, but I think my biggest disappointment, because certainly that was one of them. We've had many, and you know any sports fan can come up with a list, but the biggest of all time, I think, for me, at least at the moment in this list, 10 years from now, who knows if I live that long, it's Roger Clemens, and Roger Clemens, my all time favorite pitcher was Sandy Koufax. And I watched Koufax pitch on TV, and his fastball, they didn't have radar guns then, but I bet it's faster than most things come up with now. And that ball, when he pitched it, it would rise. It was like a rising knuckleball as a fastball. And then I saw Roger Clemens, and he struck out 21 times. And it was on, remember when old Channel 38, and we didn't have UHF, so I was watching it with the scrambled TV, but listening to it. And then he won 20 games, and he kept striking people out. And this guy was awesome. And then came that thing where he had to carry his own bags. You know? I'm serious. That to me, just it destroyed the whole deal for me. And then, of course, after that, it was the steroids and so on. But, damn, I love this guy. He was awesome. And then he said something stupid like that. And as a teacher, at that time I was a JV coach, it just took all the wind out of my sails. I can't root for this guy anymore.
Yeah, his whole career to me was unfortunate. And I know he won 345 games or whatever it was. And a lot of people think he was the best pitcher ever. And not in the Hall of Fame because he took steroids, or he was accused of taking steroids. Mm-hmm. And stupid things like carrying his own luggage and possessed a rebel and all this other stuff that, you know, he tried to pull off. And I think I kind of had the same opinion of him that you have. And the disappointment for me was 345. I mean, he's in Christy Mathewson territory,
yep.
Evanston. And you can't root for the guy.
Yep.
It's just really difficult to root for. I remember Pedro, it was easy to root for.
Yes.
He was a knucklehead, but he was easy to root for. And there were guys on other teams that, I mean, I never had a problem rooting for Mariano Rivera, even when he was pitching against the Red Sox.
Right.
He just seemed like a really good guy.
Yep.
And do you remember, I mean, I'm probably getting off the track a little bit, but do you remember in 2005 opening game when the Mariano Rivera came
yes,
out?
Yes, yes, yep.
The screenscape of a mock chair.
Yep, I know where you're going.
He just laughed. He thought that was the greatest thing. Do you suppose Roger would have done that?
You know what's funny, Steve, when he did that, Boston fans... For all the bad ink they get outside of Boston, they're pretty astute, the people who go to the games and pay all that money.
Oh, yeah.
And after he did that, he kind of became a fan favorite of the enemy, you know?
Oh, but he was nice. He was a good guy, yeah. And it shone through, you know?
Yeah, and he had a
good guy.
Yep.
You know? And, yeah, you didn't like him because he did well against your team, and I was always got petrified whenever Derek Jeter got up to bat. But you couldn't help but like him.
Right.
I mean, I went to that last game at Fenway, and I was in the press box, and I was standing up and cheering. I mean, the guy, he was just that kind of guy, you know?
I thought it was supposed to be a working press box.
And you're right. Roger Clemens was not that kind
of
guy.
Oh, it's disappointing. All right, let's go to a surprising or very an unexpected surprise that pops into your mind.
Well, there's only one for me, and it's I think it's a lot of people's surprises, so it might seem a little bit hackneyed and cliched, but how can you do better than the local kid from Winthrop scoring the winning goal against Rush?
Okay.
to me, that absolutely, you know, being part of, not part of it, but being alive and conscious when that was going on. You know, it wasn't live. For some reason, they didn't broadcast that live. But you knew that it was a Ruzioni who scored the goal, and I just remember not being able to wait for the tape delay to start. And that whole Al Michaels and, do you believe in miracles? Yes. It would have been a great thing anyway, but for me, having met the guy many times and, followed him in college and talked to him a lot while he was in college and everything, and having played against him in a pickup game once, I was just thrilled for the kid, and to me, that was absolutely the biggest thrill.
You know what makes it even more impressive, I think, Steve, is that Mike Ruzioni, through the years, I mean, he's lived off of that, but he certainly, has worn that on his sleeve proudly. But he's given so much back to the city of Winthrop, to the kids. He still hangs around. That's the wrong term. He still gives his expertise in the city to young people trying to play sports, much like Don Riley does in Gloucester. And that's what's so cool. That's what makes the legend even bigger.
Yeah, he didn't get bigger than he didn't try to become bigger than what he was. You know, he accepted that he had a lucky, was very lucky. He will be the first one to admit that he was lucky, that, an inch either way, and he could be painting bridges, he didn't try to become a big shot. He just, he was Mike Ruzioni, local boy, and you're right, he coached. He worked at BU. He worked at Winthrop High. He accepted dinner invitations and didn't ask for money. I remember he spoke a couple of times at our football banquet.
Yep.
And, of course, we did not pay speakers. We depended upon the kindness of their volunteerism or whatever, and we'd give them honorariums and things like that. But, we didn't pay them. Like, the Patriots Alumni Association wants $700. We couldn't do that. We didn't have the budget to do that. But a couple of times, Ruzioni came up and spoke. I mean, this is like having God come into your midst, And he never asked for a dime. So I just, part of what makes thrilling for me is knowing that the people that you're thrilled for deserve your adulation.
Well put.
And he did, and I always knew that, the people who I've mentioned before, they all deserved it.
I'm glad you brought up the item, football banquet, because that has been one of the coolest and most impressive events that takes place on the North Shore with respect to so many different kids. The item, year in and year out, has just done such a great job recognizing kids and honoring them and writing good things about their athleticism and their academics. And you've had such great speakers. I remember a couple of speakers. I sat next to Gino Cappelletti one night, and talking with him, it was just, I was thrilled. Are you kidding me? It was amazing. And I sat next to Dale Arnold one night. I sat next to Eddie Andelman one night. And the last time I was there, I sat next to a guy named Brian St. Pierre, and would you believe I didn't know who he was at that time, okay? So I sat next to him. I got there a little late, so I wasn't introduced. I sat next to him, and when you introduced him, I mean, we were just talking and, cordially, and then when you introduced him, he stood up and went up and up and up, and he was so big, I had no idea. And then it's Brian St. Pierre of the Atlanta Falcons. I went, oh, my God. And since then, we've dealt with him so many times, just a real class act. But that's my point. The item, you guys should be really commended. And that you should be proud of your involvement in that, Steve. I know you are, and that's been a great thing.
I always enjoyed it. It was something, that you looked at and – you always want to be remembered, not just for what you accomplished. You want to be remembered for what you did and how you and what, like you said before, what you gave back. You know, of all the compliments I ever received in my life, and obviously when you're in this business, you get a lot of brickbats too, but you do get a lot of compliments. And the one that always made me feel the best was the woman who said that when she took her kid to Middlebury College for his interview, she brought a scrapbook with them. Mm-hmm. And in the scrapbook were articles and pictures, many, many, many of which were by me.
Mm.
And she said, "You have no idea the impact you have on kids." And I think easily that's the best thing anybody ever said about me.
Well, I understand that, and I know that's very ego gratifying. You knew long before I did what Doc Enos finally taught me. Doc Enos, many, many years ago, taught me the difference between covering amateur sports, particularly kids, and professional sports. And I had I was very careful going in, but he taught me so much about, a kid. Doc would be up in the press box screaming and hollering obscenities against a player, a local kid who made a bad play, all right? In the paper, you'd read about it, and you'd see something like, "Well, after a fumble, Gloucester recovered." Blah blah. You never saw the kid's name.
Nope.
You never saw anything negative about it. He would put it in context, and okay, this was a team error, that type thing that had to be overcome, whatever. You're 15 years old, and you don't want somebody to bring up a newspaper article when you're 35 or 40 years old in front of your kid that said you made the error that cost him the game when you were 15. And it's like,
there were times, though, and Doc and I talked about this a lot, because I really liked Doc, even when he almost threw his typewriter out the window with the press box once.
You know.
So agitated, but Doc and I talked about this often, and there are times when, as much as you don't like to, you have to mention the kid's name for something that negative that happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember the time that it was a St. Mary's softball game. They were playing Buddy Henry's team. When he coached there at, I forget what the school was, Shawsheen. They were playing Shawsheen. And St. Mary's was leading 1-0 in the bottom of the seventh inning when somebody hits the ball to second base and the second baseman boots the ball and two runs score and they lose the game and everything. And what are you going to do?
Right.
You got to say it.
Right.
You can't just, you got to write the story. But I also wrote in the same story that she was the reason why they got to the finals in the first place.
There you go. Yep. Yep. Okay.
She had great games all the way through. And, for somebody who made that error and everything, she had to get up there in the bottom of the seventh inning and bat after that, and she did get her bat on the ball. She didn't get a hit, but she got her bat on the ball when most of the people were just shriveled up and struck out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I tried to think of every good thing she did.
Yeah, and it's weird.
Counteract that error.
It's weird watching the game the other night, the Super Bowl games, that the referees were actually pointing out the numbers of the guys who made penalties. And you don't do that in high school. In fact, they didn't do that in college till a few years ago. So, I know that we did a game one time. I won't mention the teams, but Team A fumbled the ball. Team A got in a fight with Team B, and certain guys were ejected. And initially, I mentioned the kids who were disqualified. And I thought later on, maybe I shouldn't have done that. So I didn't do it after that. you know, for the rest of the game. But I said there were disqualifications after that. Once was enough. And I think there are some things you got to do. And it's not death-defying or anything like that. Changing the subject, Steve, I got, as we wind down here, I want to mention my coolest unexpected surprise watching sports, professional sports. And this is going to be off the wall. It has to do with the Patriots' first Super Bowl, but not what you think. My biggest, happiest surprise was when John Madden said, well, the Patriots with this second-year quarterback, they're going to, you know, just play it conservatively, and they're going to go for overtime, and he's going to take a knee. And I said out loud in my living room, did you do your homework, John? Because they didn't do that all year. The Patriots, once Brady entered the game, you know, with Bledsoe out, they didn't do that all year. They kept going for it. They were not conservative. And to watch Brady dink and dunk and go all the way down the field, and Madden was just kind of stuttering after that. That was my happiest thing.
At one point, now I like what the Patriots are doing.
Did he say that?
Yeah. Because at the time, don't forget, at the time, the Patriots were playing with house money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were the underdog. They had, you know, they were playing the mighty Rams. You know, they had everything to gain and nothing to lose by doing that. It was more impressive to me on that subject when they just went right down the field and scored that touchdown against Atlanta in that Super Bowl.
Oh, my.
From way back.
Oh, my, yes.
Because they weren't playing with house money then.
Well, what's weird is I looked at the replay on that after the game, I watched the Patriots in the huddle, their body language, and from that third quarter on, when they were down, what, 28-3, everybody knows that one, the body language of the players going into the huddle and coming out of the language, out of the huddle, was amazing. I mean, they were bouncing out of the huddle, and you could look, and you could, in retrospect, you could say, geez, they knew they had a chance in this one.
Yeah, they were, well, that's what made them, and that's what made Brady Brady, you know, and all of the things that, I mean, I know it's becoming very fashionable to pile on Mac Jones, but I think that they were very unfair to him, very, very unfair to him from the jump. And they have an awful lot of responsibility for him turning out the way he did. But the biggest thing to me that they unfair to him was they just assumed he was going to be Tom Brady part two.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever gave a thought to the intangibles that Brady brought to games. And that, to me, he was, by a long shot, the smartest football player I've ever seen.
But, Steve, don't you think that he was nurtured and allowed to grow into that and to learn, to be able to learn, you know, especially reading defenses and so on? Because that first year, it seemed to me, they changed their offense. Because, you know, Bledsoe was sling it down the field. And they changed it to the dink and dunk thing to let Brady do his thing. So they allowed him to grow.
Which they did not allow Mac Jones to do.
Agreed.
They threw an offense. Well, I mean, the first year, I mean, McDaniel certainly got it right. But, you know, it's just been a nightmare for the kids since then. And you're right. You know, Brady, the first year, Brady wasn't Brady.
That's right.
You know, he became Brady,
mm-hmm.
or what people think of as Brady. You know, I think that the first Super Bowl, notwithstanding, I think that the starting point in his career was a game early, two seasons later, when they were playing down in Miami, and it went to overtime, and he hooked up with Troy Brown for this 80-yard touchdown pass that won the game in overtime.
Yeah.
And I think after that, I think he was Brady.
Yeah.
But I remember that game like it was yesterday too. You know, and I didn't have the same reaction that you did, because my first reaction when he started throwing it is, what the hell are you doing? I thought the better course of action was to take the knee and play her overtime. I also thought that they had pretty much lost the game when the Rams tied it up, and mm-hmm. they never dreamed they were going to do it. They didn't be successful at it. Because no Patriots team ever did anything like that.
That's right, and that's what made
it. They were like the Red Sox. Everything they touched turned to you-know-what.
Well, that was a happy surprise, and I look back on that one fondly, and the same thing with the Atlanta game. And I'll tell you what, while we're at it, we got to finish up here, but I think one of the most spectacular games I've ever seen was the loss to the Eagles a couple years ago when Brady threw for 502 yards. I mean, that was a spectacular game.
And lost. That's about this, on the same scale as giving up 6 points and losing. Yeah, it's just the ridiculousness of that is just off the chart.
All right, next time we talk, we got to. I want to know, and I'm going to ask all you guys how the Patriots rebuilt, because you can't do it with one player. But I guess if you have the first round pick in every round, that would probably be pretty helpful.
Yeah, that's not going to hurt. But you know, It's a bigger question as to how they just have to do so much.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that another time.
All right.
Think about an hour.
Okay, Steve, I wish you well. I'm not sure about next week what we're going to do, but in the meantime, have a wonderful week and best of luck to you all the way around.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Bye
bye.
Good luck with your car.
Thanks, Steve. Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye.
All right, that is Steve Kraus, who is. Sports journalist and news journalist at The Item, and freelancing online as well, with great thoughts all the time. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.